Welcome back to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin, who is our Hoffman Center nutritionist. Together we work to solve patients' problems, and we're applying ourselves to your questions today. Radioprogram at AOL.com is the way to send questions to us. Please make them succinct and of general interest, and then we will endeavor to answer them. So, what's up for this segment?
Okay, we've got an email here. I don't have a name, but he says, my question has two parts. My cardiologist has suggested I switch to one of the new anticoagulants on the market. I've been on Coumadin for about 5 years for AFib. Which of the alternatives to Coumadin is best?
Well, I'm going to just say, I can't say because I am not a cardiologist. Mm-hmm. Cardiologists, I think, in the best position. Thank you for according me the great respect that you think I can judge whether your cardiologist's advice is correct or not. I know that I sometimes weigh in with critical opinions about, you know, one or another field of medicine from my perspective, but I got to say, this is a bit of a muddle. You know, we got these new meds to replace good old-fashioned Coumadin, which is the traditional blood thinner for, you know, from the way before I was even a medical student, that's what was used. And it's rat poison.
Yeah.
Rat poison kills rats by making them hemorrhage to death. But they discover that if you just give a little bit of rat poison to a person, it will thin their blood. But that's a dangerous proposition, because if you don't give enough, it won't thin the blood. And if you give too much, it'll thin the blood too much, and you'll bleed to death or have a bleeding episode. Oh. So you have to get your blood checked all the time to make sure that it's okay. And then, oh, by the way, vitamin K in foods interferes with it, and, you know, that's no good. So it's an inconvenient drug to use, but it's a reliable drug, and it's well-studied.
Mm-hmm.
Now there's these new drugs, and they're coming on the market, and all you have to do is turn on the TV and see how many ads there are from law firms that are trying to get major settlements on behalf of patients using these new drugs because they're having uncontrolled bleeding episodes. Because one of the nice things about Coumadin is that if you've got a bleeding episode with Coumadin, all you got to do is take some vitamin K and it will stop the bleeding. And with these other drugs, they're not vitamin K dependent. So the
very
bleeding,
scary.
Yeah. So when the bleeding starts, it's harder to stop. Now, you know,
Hemorrhagic stroke comes to mind.
Right, yeah. That's one of the reasons why I thank Molecular Star is that I'm not, working in a hospital setting or working in conventional medicine, because we have gotten burned in the field of medicine by the introduction of all these new hopeful drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the criticisms I have for my conventional medicine colleagues is that they're too bright and optimistic about the progress of medicine. Is that they get really excited, they go to medical conventions, they hear, like, there's this new drug and it's going to be great, it's going to replace Coumadin. And I almost went for it. I said, this is going to be great, because Coumadin is a lousy drug, we're going to have all these great new drugs, and you won't have to get tested all the time, and you won't have to worry about, you know, having too much green tea, and you can eat your kale and your arugula, and it'll be fine. Well, these medications there have been some problems with medications. Now, I'm not saying that you shouldn't take these medications. It just, you know, six of one, half dozen of the other. I think you're going to have to rely on the expertise of your cardiologist to decide which among these less than perfect options is for you. Now, some people, I invariably get the question, well, I don't want to take a drug. I have atrial fibrillation, and I want to thin my blood with all these wonderful natural blood thinners out there. Well, what do we have? We have fish oil. We have garlic. We have natokinase. We have vitamin E, high-dose vitamin E. We have all these things that can thin the blood. But do you want to take a chance on that when the stakes are very high and you could get a stroke?
Oh.
There's nothing worse than a relatively healthy middle-aged person or a vibrant older person who gets a stroke because, unbeknownst to them, they had atrial fibrillation. They flipped a blood clot. Excuse me, I'm having a TIA. That's not a joke.
Get the Coumadin.
A blood clot to one of the arteries that feeds the brain, and then you have a stroke. That's a major cause of stroke, and you do want to thin the blood. In some countries, they permit certain types of patients to just take aspirin. Aspirin is a little iffy because it's an unreliable blood thinner for some people. Doesn't always work. And, of course, it can cause stomach ulcers, which Coumadin is less likely to cause.
Right.
So what are you going to do? It's not perfect, you know.
He has a second part to his question.
That was a long answer to the first
part. No, but it's a terrific answer. I'd like to know what you think of success rates for cryoablation as a cure for AFib. I've been cardioverted 3 times, but after a few months, I go back into AFib.
Well, there you go. See, so this is also a technique that's not perfect. I think it's a remarkable technique. Cardioversion is involving it's actually a sonic type therapy, which changes the electrical conductivity of the heart, sort of zaps the heart to remodel the electrical pathways in the heart. And it's a wonderful high-tech method. It doesn't always work, as in this case. This is illustrative. And occasionally, it will result in bad side effects. I actually have a friend who had a very rare case of a bad side effect where he actually had damage to his lung due to the proximity of the pulmonary artery to the site of the ablation. And you know, there was a lawsuit, he won money, but unfortunately he's left with diminished lung capacity, a very rare side effect of this procedure. So you know, it is a preferable alternative to walking around with atrial fibrillation or taking a lot of medication, which can have side effects. You can actually fix the problem, but it doesn't always work.
Right. You know, I read on Medscape recently that more and more people, especially seniors or retired people, are being diagnosed with AFib because they're probably drinking too much.
Okay.
Well, what else can cause AFib?
Well, they call this holiday heart.
Oh.
And this is actually something that I was familiar with during my residency because I trained at the Manhattan VA. And, you know, veterans, I love them. They're great. You know, they treated us young doctors. You know, we looked like we were just out of high school, you know, like these young doctors. They called us sir, like we were in the military. And they, you know, practically saluted us because had sort of a military kind of orientation. But this was in the post-Vietnam era, and a lot of these guys were, you know, had post-traumatic stress syndrome. They were down on their luck, and in New York City, many of them were substance abusers, and a lot of them were drinking a lot. And they were on disability, and we would call this phenomenon holiday heart. We would say, oh, forget about it. Are you on over the 4th of July? Oh, forget about it. It's going to be a mess because these guys are going to come in with arrhythmias. And sure enough, the increased alcohol intake would prompt a rash of admissions to the hospital for atrial fibrillation. So it can damage the heart. You know, they say that alcohol is good for the heart. Well, it's good for prevention of atherosclerosis, no question. It will prevent the heart attacks to some extent.
But the dose is very important.
Yes.
And we're talking about 3.5 ounces of red wine 3 days a week, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. That's it.
Okay.
3.5 ounces, folks, is 7 right. tablespoons of wine. Go do it by the tablespoon. You'll go, oh.
Well,
that's the medicinal dose.
So, when it comes to prevention of deposits of arterial plaque, actually, it's almost the more the merrier. You can drink enormous amounts, and at very high levels of alcohol intake, you will somewhat retard atherosclerosis.
Yeah.
But then you have another host of problems. With a very small increment in alcohol, more than 2 drinks a day, you increase the risk of stroke.
You
increase the risk of arrhythmias. You certainly increase the risk of accidents, of violence and mayhem.
Cancer.
A cancer of the esophagus and stomach. And, of course, all the liver problems, which is what I think fourth or fifth major cause of death in the United States is cirrhosis of the liver.
Yeah.
Not always due to alcohol. It could be due to hepatitis or poor diet. But, you know, so...
Right. What are the symptoms of AFib?
Well, you sometimes they're insidious because people are not always aware of their pulse. Often people say, my pulse feels irregular, or my feel like I'm getting palpitations, like a racing sensation in the heart. But sometimes people will just be tired. They'll just feel like, oh my goodness, I can't get up the stairs. I feel so lethargic. I can't, I'm out of breath. Okay. Or they may notice that they have swelling in the ankles all of a sudden. And that could be due to lack
of
pumping action.
That's not a kidney thing? Oh, okay.
Well,
action,
when you have swelling action of, when you have a lot of people with swollen ankles, it could be due to poor veins, but it could also be due to, we have to work up all these other causes.
I see. Okay. Hope that answers your question. Okay. This comes from...
And this is sort of... What you just said is interesting. It's like, let's say a patient comes to you as a nutritional patient, and the patient comes to you and says, I have swelling of the ankles. What can I do for it?
Oh.
And you, as a nutritionist, you know, they're going to expect that you're going to give them, like, something that reduces swelling. Like, you
no.
can use...
I want a diagnosis
Gerovenous optimizer.
yeah.
So that's where it comes in handy to...
Right.
For the patient to come to me for the workup,
exactly.
or for them to have already gone to a doctor and said, well, they know
exactly.
what it is. I had my veins checked. I had a Doppler. It's poor circulation. My legs, my heart's fine. My kidneys are fine. It's not all this.
That's so, important information.
Right. But, you know, occasionally, I mean, sometimes I see people, they go to the health food store and they'll say, you know, to the person behind the counter, I've got, shortness of breath.
The juice.
I got shortness. What can I take for that? Now, I think they're pretty well trained now in health food stores not to say, oh, I got this. Look, this is great for shortness of breath. It's like, you know, take some fish oil. You have to sometimes come up with an actual medical diagnosis to address the problem.
And realize that the swelling of the ankles is a symptom of something else most of the time. But, you know, if it's a matter of poor circulation or whatever, that you've been diagnosed with something already, then there's something that we can actually work on.
Right.
Okay. Okay, our next question comes from Stan. Love your radio program, but I can never get through to ask you these two questions, Dr. Hoffman. One, can I take silver, colloidal silver, internally to kill viruses and bacteria in my body? And two, can I use full-spectrum light to get vitamin D?
Yeah, with the colloidal silver, I think, you know, this is something that's...
You can't take it for a long period of time.
It's a controversial thing. Colloidal silver has been, I will use the word discouraged, not banned, but virtually banned by the FDA for internal use. However, a lot of people are using it internally. And the reason for that is, it's a little bit of a misunderstanding, is that poorly made colloidal silver can cause a condition called argyria, which is a...
Turning blue.
You ever see the Blue Man Group? Well, actually, they look a little more steely gray than blue.
Yeah.
But there
was a man on Oprah. This was many years ago when Oprah Winfrey was on the air doing her regular talk show. But what was very interesting is he didn't even notice himself turning blue because it happened over a longer period of time.
Right.
But then one day said, hey, man, you're blue. And he didn't mean sad.
Yes. However, the makers of colloidal silver claim that if it is made correctly, that won't happen because it is colloidal and it won't be deposited. And I think that there's some risk that you will get a form of colloidal silver that could promote silver accumulation. After all, silver is a heavy metal. You really don't want high levels of that accumulating in your body. That being said, silver is a very effective killer of harmful stuff. So I'm not sure you want to get it into your bloodstream, you know, flowing around to kill Lyme disease in your tissues deep within your joints. But I do use it for topical use. I use it on the skin. We also tell patients to spray it in their throat if they have a sore throat or have a mouth sore. You know, can swallow a little bit of it. It's not enormously toxic. They swallow a little bit. I think it gets to be a problem if you guzzle it or drink it. Mm-hmm. And we also use it in a nasal spray for patients who have chronic sinusitis. So I think it has use. There are even silver solution eye drops for people with infections. But I'm a little reluctant to use silver in the eye. I think that's...
Like for conjunctivitis or something?
Possibly. But, you know, there are other, you know, more innocent alternatives. Now, silver used to be used all the time I mean, they put silver in babies' eyes because that's the standard treatment to prevent gonorrhea in a baby that is born to a mother with gonorrhea, goes to the genital tract,
boy.
And will get gonorrhea of the eyes. And that was used to be a cause of blindness when gonorrhea was common.
Herpes, too, I think.
Herpes, I'm not sure it's going to help herpes.
Yeah,
but, ocular herpes. Right. But, you know, in theory, it's supposed to kill everything.
Okay.
So, you know, I am a conservative endorser of silver products, but I am not urging our patients to guzzle it or, you know, giving intravenously, as some people are doing, because I have concerns.
I'm hearing a lot about staph infection in the sinuses or in the nostrils.
There you go,
lately.
Yeah. And that
is that helpful for
it? Could be an ideal agent for that because the bacteria have not acquired resistance to silver. That many antibiotics are no longer effective. So that could be good.
Okay.
But there's a great alternative. You've got, MRSA on your skin or something like that. You could apply it.
Manuka is supposed to be very good.
Manuka is very
that.
Good for that.
Yeah, Manuka.
Coconut
honey.
Oil has antibacterial effects. Those are good
mm-hmm.
things.
Mm-hmm.
Oregano oil, olive leaf. Okay. But what you have, let's
and
finish the question.
Stan is asking, can I use full spectrum light to get vitamin D?
No. Well, that's
not
you're
really.
Confusing things. You know, this is like the hunger season in New York. It's dark, it's the cold. And
it's very cold.
I've gotten several calls from patients about SAD and I tell them to get a full spectrum light. A full spectrum light, one of the specific characteristics of full spectrum light is it should not emit ultraviolet because you're supposed to look into the light. So, you know, it's like looking into the sun.
You're not shining it on your body. You have to look at the light. I didn't realize
well,
that.
No, okay. you need to look at it. It needs to hit your retina.
Okay.
And so the full spectrum light is designed to reset your circadian rhythm
mm-hmm.
and give you the simulation of a day-night cycle when it's dark, cloudy outside and when you might have seasonal affective disorder. And it can reset your mood and it can help you with your sleep patterns. You do not want any one of the certifications for good full spectrum lights is they mm-hmm. emit no UV.
Yeah.
They should not emit UV. Where do you want UV? Well, if you want a tanning light, then you get something that is a UV unit. But usually,
right.
I don't tell consumers to get these things because you want a certified, inspected UV light like you go to a place that's a certified tanning parlor.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can get it. And there's controversy about that, but I'm not discouraging people from tanning because it will UV light will generate vitamin D, but full spectrum light will not generate any vitamin D because there's no UV in it.
Yeah.
So different things. Now, by the way, as a cure for the winter blues, both work. Here's how: the full spectrum light works on your brain. It works on the pineal gland and resets your circadian rhythm so that you don't feel drowsy and depressed and want to eat a lot all day and want to hibernate. It's a wake-up call.
Mm-hmm.
The UV light that you can either get from a trip to Cancun or from a tanning parlor also has euphoric effects. It actually helps to boost mood.
And it lowers cortisol.
It lowers cortisol.
Yeah.
And so it is okay to do that, but they're different things.
Yeah.
It's different. So if you are suffering from severe winter blues and this is time of year when we're providing advice to people on that, don't just take Prozac. You know, that's
don't take Prozac.
Right.
Don't take
Well, you know, so look, I mean, there's some, just like with every drug, there's some people where it hits the sweet spot, it's necessary, they can benefit from it. But it maybe is a last resort. Get the full spectrum lights, try them out. So what you really want to do is you want to start in October with that, because by the time you get to SAD, it's hard to reverse. You want to prevent it rather than, once it happens to reverse it.
In addition,
but also you can tan.
You can tan. Okay.
Yeah.
Take a vitamin D supplement, please. There was a study of men in Nebraska. They needed as high as 7,000 IU of vitamin D every day.
And the vitamin D that you take orally mm-hmm. works pretty well to alleviate depression, but it's not the same as being exposed to
light.
Oh, yeah. There's something about that. And that's also, frankly, the studies have been done. You know, some people are addicted to tanning, like tan mom.
The
people are nuts about it, and that's terrible because they make their skin into leather, photo aging, cancer. It's terrible. So you do not want to overdose on this. But why do people get addicted to tanning? What is it about tanning? it feels good. It generates endorphins.
Yes.
So anything that generates endorphins, it's like any addictive substance.
Mm-hmm.
If it feels good, do it, but you get addicted to
yeah.
it. So that's why they just, you know, they said teenagers, they need to get parental approval or whatever. They're banned from doing it in some states because they get a little nuts about it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, it's not just the aesthetic thing that they want their skin dark. They get
better.
High off it.
Yeah.
And we want to harness that high, but
yeah.
we also don't want to get people to be lost in the high and
exactly.
damage their skin.
Precisely. Yeah.
So, that was a good question that harnessed a good discussion.
Open your curtains first thing in the morning. Let the light in. You have to get up around the same time every day. That's also important to fight SAD, seasonal affective disorder.
What's that song from Hair? There's something, the sunlight, see the sunlight, see the sunrise. That dates me. You know, it's the Broadway show Hair. I saw it when I was a little kid. So.
Okay, I didn't see it.
Mm-hmm. It's like the hippie anthem of Hair. Okay. That's it for today's edition of Intelligent Medicine. Thank you for joining us, and thank you, Layla, for participating.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
Radio program at AOL.com is the way that you get questions to us. We'll answer as many of them as we can over the next few weeks.